All right. Let's go to the book of Hosea. Prophet Hosea, chapter number 3. We're going to go from chapter 3 to chapter 14 tonight. Okay? We're going to make quite a journey here, all right? But as we come to this portion tonight, one of the things that we need to do before we get into the notes tonight, we need to come through chapter 3. Chapter 3 has a portion that is going to deal for right at this moment, and then there's a portion of it that is future. Part of the instruction is going to be given to Hosea, specifically for right now, and then part of it's eventually going to take place with the nation of Israel. So we'll pick up in chapter 3 in verse number 1. It's 5 verses. It's inserted in here. And chapter 3, the way it is placed in here, you see Hosea, and then also you're going to see a future prophetic portion of the prophet Hosea and what is yet to come. So chapter 3, verse 1, then said the Lord unto me, speaking to Hosea, go, love a woman, beloved of her friend, yet an adulteress according to the love of the Lord toward the children of Israel, who look to other gods and love flagons of wine. In other words, there's a comparison here between Hosea. He told Hosea to go, get Gomer, and to love her regardless of what she's done, regardless of where she is. Verse 2, so I bought her to me for 15 pieces of silver and for an omer of barley and a half omer of barley. Now, I want you to understand the significance of verse 2. 15 pieces of silver is about half the price of a slave. So he's going to pay half the price of what you would normally pay for a slave for a full price. The omer of barley. And the half omer of barley is approximately 10 bushels of barley. So that's what he will purchase her with. Verse 3, so I said unto her, you shall abide for me or with me many days. You shall not play the harlot. You will not be for another man. So will I also be for you. Verse 4, for the children of Israel shall abide many days without a king, without a prince, without a sacrifice, without an image, without an ephod, and without a teraphim. Afterward, then shall the children of Israel return and seek the Lord their God and David their king, and shall fear the Lord and his goodness in the latter days. This also ties back to Ezekiel's prophecy of the latter days in the nation of Israel back in Ezekiel chapter 34. Beginning that process as we move toward the last days, matter of fact, the 70th week of Daniel, and as we move into the 1,000-year millennial reign of Christ. Okay, so that's chapter 3. So let's go to your notes now. So as we see something that is prophetic in chapter 3, as we come to chapter number 4, I want you to notice the guilt of the northern kingdom, number 1 in your notes, is the main theme of the opening indictment. And that's where they are, the people and their leaders, the prophets, the rulers, and especially the priests. They're going to carry a significant load here. We're the objects of God's displeasure. We're going to see that beginning in chapter number 4. So Hosea, number 2, begins this portion, chapter 4, with a charge against the nation for a breach of covenant. So let's look at chapter 4, beginning in verse number 1, and notice what it says. It says, hear the word of the Lord, children of Israel, for the Lord has a controversy, or there's a conflict here with the inhabitants of the land, because there is no truth, no mercy, no knowledge of God in the land. By swearing and lying and killing and stealing and committing adultery, they break out and blood touches blood. In other words, blood against blood. Okay. And then verse 3, therefore shall the land mourn, and everyone that dwells there shall languish with the beasts of the field, with the fowls of heaven, the fishes of the sea also shall be taken away. One of the things that you need to understand here in these first three verses is, number three in your notes, the basis for this judgment was the covenant God made with Israel at Mount Sinai. And we need to go back to Mount Sinai. We need to go back to the book of Exodus and take a look at this just to show you how substantial this is. One of the things that you will notice in verse 3, before we go back to Exodus 19, you will find there are pieces of the Decalogue or the Ten Commandments that are listed in verse number 3. And these all deal with the relationship between neighbors, okay? Not the relationship between them and God, but between them individually and neighbors, okay? But let's go back to Exodus chapter 19. You got to go back to the Old Testament and take a look at really what has happened here. As we come to chapter 19 in the book of Exodus, the children of Israel are out of the land of Egypt. They come into the wilderness of Sinai. Matter of fact, they're in Rephidim, in the desert of Sinai. They're in that region. That's where they are. And so they've come out of Egypt, and now what God is going to do is God is going to speak with Moses. And let's pick this up in verse number 7, okay? And Moses now is going to talk and speak with the people. Verse 7, and Moses came and called for the elders of the people and laid before their faces all of these words which the Lord commanded him. And you'll see them if you go back to verse 4, actually beginning in verse 3. Verse 3, verse 4, verse 5, and verse 6. Okay? In Exodus 19, you come to verse 7. So Moses gathers all the elders of the people, laid before their faces all of these words which the Lord commanded him. Verse 8 is what I want you to see. And all the people answered together and said, all that the Lord hath spoken, we will do. And Moses returned the words of the people unto the Lord. Now let's go back to Hosea. So the indictment that is brought against Israel, the northern kingdom of Israel, the indictment that is brought goes back, and it's a result. The basis is the covenant that was made between God and Israel. Number 4 in your notes. However, that promise was soon broken. Just as Gomer didn't take her marriage vow seriously, but went to live with another man, so Israel broke her promises to God and turned, of course, to pagan idols. That's where she was. Israel has committed spiritual adultery. And that's the condition that we find her in. Matter of fact, verse number 3 is significant when you look at it. Okay? Because I want you to notice, or verse number 2, I'm sorry, the swearing or the cursing, the lying, the killing, the stealing, the committing adultery. If you go look at the Ten Commandments, you see those. And those deal with relationships between each other. Number 5 in your notes. There was no faithfulness. In other words, there was no truth in the land. And there was no loyal love to the Lord. It was gone. I mean, that's where Israel had come to. The northern kingdom of Israel. Now, Judah. Now, let me say this to you, okay? Don't think Judah's sitting down here all in the exact right relationship with the Lord and everything's going great in Judah, because that is not the case. But I'll tell you what's happening in Judah. Judah's watching what's going on in the northern kingdom of Israel. And they're watching the difficulties that are taking place right there, right now. And so they're watching all of this, okay? And they're observing all of this. Number 6 in your notes, there was no mercy in the land. No love for one's neighbor, no compassion for the poor and needy. People were false-hearted toward God and hard-hearted towards each other. That's where they had gotten to. That's how far they had come, which is significant when you think about Israel and their relationship with God. Number 7, the basic sin was ignorance, though. You say, how is that? The basic sin was ignorance. There was no knowledge of God in the land. This means much more than knowledge about God. It refers to a personal knowledge of God. Look down at verse number 6 of Hosea chapter 4. My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Because you have rejected knowledge, I will also reject you, that you shall be no priest to me. Let me tell you what. Now what he does is he takes and he lays this responsibility on the back of the priest. But now there's significance. There's something significant about these priests that he's talking here to as well, especially in the northern kingdom. And there's a difficulty here with these particular priests, and we're going to take a look at this, okay? But he tells them, he said, I will also reject you. You shall be no priest to me. Seeing that you have forgotten the law of your God, I will also forget your children. Now, that's a pretty heavy statement. But that's where Israel was at this point with God. Number 8 in your notes. In verses 4 through verse 14, when you take these verses in their context and look at them, we see God's indictment against the priest. Look at verse number 9. And there shall be like people, like priests, and I will punish them for their ways and reward them their doings. They shall eat and not have enough. They shall commit harlotry and shall not increase because they have left off to take heed to the Lord. In other words, they have not listened. They have not heeded to the Lord. Harlotry and wine and new wine take away the heart. My people ask counsel at their stocks, and their staff declares unto them, for the spirit of harlotry has caused them to err, and they have gone whoring from under their God. They've thrown themselves into spiritual adultery. It's where their God doesn't mean anything to them anymore. They've taken on all of the idols. They've taken on all the gods, Baal, Molech, Ashdod, all of them in the land of Canaan. That's who they've gone to. And that's who they have chosen to worship. Number 9, and this is key to understanding Hosea. When Jeroboam the first set up his own religious system in Israel, many of the true priests fled back to Jerusalem. They came back to Judah. You need to understand the picture here of what's going on when Hosea is writing here. Okay? And you need to understand some of the history to understand where Israel is at this point in time. When Solomon was king, as Solomon was getting ready to die, Solomon had a son by the name of Rehoboam. He had a colonel, so to speak, in the army by the name of Jeroboam, who had fled to Egypt. When Solomon died, all right, Jeroboam came back from Egypt. Also, while Jeroboam and Rehoboam were in the field together, something happened. Matter of fact, Rehoboam's cloak was torn and was ripped into 10 pieces. And they were told at that point in time that the kingdom is going to split. It's going to divide. At the time of Solomon, it was a united kingdom under the rule and reign of David, then Solomon. But now that Rehoboam, Solomon's son, is going to come to the throne, the kingdom is going to be divided and split. 10 of the tribes of Israel are going to go to the north, of which Samaria is the capital of. 2 of the tribes would remain in the south. That's Benjamin and Judah, to become the southern kingdom of Judah. Jeroboam became the king of the northern kingdom. Rehoboam became the king of the southern kingdom of Judah. Here's what Jeroboam did. Jeroboam thought that it would be entirely too far. And here's what he was also afraid of. For them to travel from that region of the northern kingdom, to travel down to Jerusalem to worship, that's too far to travel. He was also concerned that if they were to come back to the southern kingdom of Judah and come back to Jerusalem, they may not return back to the northern kingdom. And Jeroboam couldn't afford to lose any of the people out of the northern kingdom. So here's what he did. So Jeroboam goes to Bethel and Dan. And in Bethel and Dan, he sets up a golden calf for the northern kingdom of Israel for them to go to Dan and to Bethel to worship and not to come to Jerusalem. But he also went a step further. Okay? And now I want you to turn to 2 Chronicles, and I want you to see the second step that he took. 2 Chronicles chapter number 11. One of the things that Rehoboam wanted to do, Rehoboam wanted, matter of fact, if you look at the first part of chapter 11, Rehoboam gathered up all these men, and here's what he wanted to do. He wanted to go fight against the northern kingdom of Israel, okay? He just wanted to go take them all back, all right? And basically, he was told not to do that, all right? So what he did in verse number 5, so Rehoboam just dwelt in Jerusalem. He built cities for defense of Judah. So that's what he concentrated on. But we come to verse 13, and I want you to notice what happens. And the priests and the Levites that were in all of Israel resorted to him out of all of their coasts. For the Levites left their suburbs and their possession and came to Judah and Jerusalem. For Jeroboam and his sons had cast them off from executing the priest office unto the Lord. He removed them. He removed the Levites. And watch the next step that he took, verse 15. And he ordained him priests. He did that. He selected who he wanted. And look where he placed them. In the high places and for the devils and for the calves which he had made. No wonder the northern kingdom of Israel is in the condition that they're in. And no wonder the harshness of God against the priests who were filling that position. Because when you go back to Hosea chapter 4 and look at verse number 6, he said, I will also reject you. You shall be no priest to me. See, they were. So no wonder there was a lack of knowledge there. Number 10 in your notes. So, of course, these unqualified priests neither knew the Lord nor his law. They were concentrated on the worship of those golden calves that were there. That's what they concentrated on. Number 11, they were primarily interested in having an easy job that would provide them with food, clothing, and pleasure, especially opportunities to be with the shrine prostitutes. That's how low they had stooped to. That's where they were. Now, I don't know about you, but that's pretty significant when you consider that and where they were. Number 12, basically Hosea said, don't blame the people for what's happening because they're only following your bad example. Because who did the people listen to? They followed the priest. So don't get mad at the people. All they're doing is following your bad example is what they're doing. Number 13. So next, Hosea turns to the people of the southern kingdom of Judah who were carefully watching the events in Israel. They're watching. Hosea's warning is clear. And basically, here's what Hosea tells: do not meddle in the affairs of Israel because their doom is sure. You need to stay away. You need to concentrate on what you need to be doing and leave the northern kingdom of Israel alone. Look at verse 15 of chapter 4. Though you, Israel, play the harlot, let not Judah offend and come not unto Gilgal, neither go up to Bethaven, nor swear the Lord liveth. For Israel slideth back as a backsliding heifer. Now the Lord will feed them as a lamb in a large place. Ephraim is joined to idols. And notice what Hosea says, let him alone. Verse 18. Their drink is sour. They've committed harlotry continually. Her rulers with shame do love. Give you the wind has bound her up in her wings, and they shall be ashamed because of their sacrifices. Number 14. It's interesting when you look at verse 15. Here, the people of Judah were supposed to worship in Jerusalem and not go to the idols in the northern kingdom of Israel at Gilgal and Bethel. But notice it says Bethaven. It's interesting when you look at this, Hosea calls Bethel Bethaven. And let me tell you the difference here. Bethaven means, in Hebrew, Bethaven means house of evil or deceit. Bethel means house of God. Amos chapter 5, you'll see the use of Bethel versus Bethaven. When you go back to Jeroboam, he established these in Bethel and in Dan. Also in Gilgal, but the name has been changed here from Bethel to Bethaven to give the distinction between it's no longer a house of God, but it's a house of evil. That's what that is. Isn't that interesting? Okay. And that changes, you see it as you go through it. Matter of fact, 1 Kings chapter 12, verse 25 through verse 30, you can just jot that down. That's where Jeroboam set them up. So you can go and look at that when you get some more time. For the sake of time, we're going to keep going. Okay. Number 15, Israel was like a stubborn heifer, not a submissive lamb. And God's whirlwind of judgment would sweep the kingdom away. Israel and Judah were weak, sick nations. Instead of turning to the Lord for healing, both of them turned to the king of Assyria for help. Let's go to chapter 5 and look at verse 13. When Ephraim saw his sickness and Judah saw his wound, then went Ephraim to the Assyrian and sent to King Jareb, yet could he not heal you nor cure you of your wound. In other words, instead of turning to God for what they needed, they turned to the king of Assyria. Well, guess what? They're getting ready to go into full-fledged bondage to Assyria. So who are you going to turn to, Israel? Where are you going to go in the time of your greatest need? Number 17, they needed prayer and repentance. That's what they needed. But instead, they trusted politics and useless treaties. That's where they turned to. All the Lord could do was withdraw and wait for them to seek his face in truth and humility. That's all he could do. One of the things about God, God's never going to force anything. He's not going to force you to love him, nor force his love on you. Number 18, let's go to chapter 6. This is interesting because we have a turn of events here in chapter number 6. When you read chapter 6, you get the impression that the nation is sincere. I mean, if you just read chapter 6, you almost get that impression. Repenting and seeking the Lord. But when you read what God says, you get another picture here. Look at chapter 6 and verse 1 through verse 3. And notice as you read this, it says, come and let us return unto the Lord. Israel speaking here. For he has torn and he will heal us. He has smitten and he will bind us up. After 2 days will he revive us. In other words, only going to take 2 days and it'll all be over. Okay? God's going to revive us, and in the third day, he'll raise us up, and we'll live in his sight. Then shall we know if we follow on to know the Lord, his going forth is prepared as the morning, and he shall come unto us as the rain, as the latter and the former rain unto the earth. Now look at chapter 7 and verse 10. Big change here. And the pride of Israel testifieth to his face. You ought to underline that. The pride of Israel testifieth to his face. And they do not return to the Lord their God, nor seek him for all of this. Look at verse 13. Woe unto them, for they have fled from me. Destruction unto them, because they have transgressed against me. Though I have redeemed them, yet they have spoken lies against me. Look down at verse 16. They return, but not to the Most High. They are like a deceitful bow. Their princes shall fall by the sword for the rage of their tongue. This shall be their derision in the land of Egypt. Number 19, to begin with, their concern was for healing and not cleansing. They saw their nation in difficulty and wanted God to make things right. But they did not come with broken hearts and a surrendered will. They just wanted God to put everything back. Okay, just to move everything back the way it used to be. Number 20, they wanted happiness, not holiness. They wanted a change of circumstances, but not a change in character. They shed tears of remorse over their suffering, but not tears of repentance over their sin. That's the key. Number 21, the people saw forgiveness and restoration as a mechanical thing that was guaranteed and not as a relational matter that involved getting right with God. Number 22, the Christian life is a relationship with God, and the relationship is not based on mechanical, cut and dried formulas. That is not where it is. Chapter 8. Chapter 8, we need to read, okay? I told y'all we're gonna cover some ground, okay? Chapter 8, starting in verse 1. So here's what he tells Hosea. Set your trumpet to your mouth. A trumpet, when the trumpet was blown, was for assembly or for warning, okay? So he says, set the trumpet to your mouth. He will come as an eagle against the house of the Lord because they have transgressed my covenant and trespassed against my law. Israel shall, now watch this. This is where they are. Israel will cry unto me, my God, we know thee. Israel has cast off the thing that is good. The enemy shall pursue him. They have set up kings, but not by me. They've made princesses, and I knew it not. Of their silver and their gold have they made them idols that they may be cut off. Your calf, O Samaria, has cast you off. Mine anger is kindled against them. How long will it be ere they attain to innocency? For from Israel was it also. The workmen made it. Therefore it is not God, but the calf of Samaria shall be broken in pieces. For they have sown the wind, and they shall reap the whirlwind. It has no stalk, the bud shall yield no meal. If so be it yield, the strangers will swallow it up. Israel is swallowed up, now shall they be among the Gentiles as a vessel wherein is no pleasure. For they are gone up to Assyria, a wild donkey alone by himself. Ephraim has hired lovers. Yea, though they have hired among the nations, now will I gather them, and they shall sorrow a little for the burden of the king of princesses. Because Ephraim has made many altars to sin. Altars shall be unto him to sin. I have written to him the great things of my law, but they were counted as a strange thing. They sacrifice flesh for the sacrifice of my offerings and eat it, but the Lord accepts them not. Now will he remember their iniquity and visit their sins. They shall return to Egypt. For Israel has forgotten his maker and built temples, and Judah has multiplied fenced cities. But I will send a fire upon his cities, and it shall devour the palaces thereof. Wow. Let me ask you a question. How'd you like to be Hosea and deliver that message? Huh? Get fired. Dr. Io said they'd get fired. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Imagine delivering that message. Number 24. So how could Gomer ever question her husband's love? Let me ask you a question. How could we ever question God's love? How could we? How could Israel ever question God's love? Does it happen today? It does. Are we any different than Israel was? No. We're not. When Israel prospered, here was one of the things that God was always concerned about. As Israel prospered, they got further away from God. The same thing happens today. Because what happens is we begin to trust within ourselves. That's what Israel did. Israel wanted to be like the other nations around them. They joined themselves to idols. They began to marry within the land of Canaan. They entered into treaties and agreements with the land that God specifically told them not to. And it was costly. Can it be costly for us today? Sure it can be. Number 24 in your notes. Did he not demonstrate it by seeking her out, pleading with her to come home and paying the price to set her free? Number 25. How could Israel ever question God's love and refuse to respond to it? After all, the nation had not only broken the law of God, but they had broken the very heart of God himself. Imagine being God. Looking at the very people that he had placed his name on and committed spiritual adultery. Let's go to chapter 14. But all is not lost. I like the end of the story. Let me tell you what it does. It speaks to the long suffering of God, to his mercy and to his love. In the closing chapters of the book, Israel is reminded of God's love and compassion for his people. Let me tell you something. God's not finished with Israel yet. Just hold on. Chapter 14, verse 1. O Israel, return unto the Lord your God, for you have fallen or stumbled by your own iniquity. In other words, you can't blame anybody else. You did it. Verse 2. Take with you words and turn to the Lord and say unto him, take away all iniquity and receive us graciously, so we will render, depending on the translation you have, it may say calves or it will say fruit. Okay. So will we render the fruit of our lips. Verse 3. Some translations will have Asher. That is also Assyria. Assyria shall not save us. We will not ride upon horses, neither will we say any more to the work of our hands, you are our God. For in you, the fatherless or the orphans find mercy. Verse 4, I will heal their backsliding or apostasy. I will love them freely, for my anger is turned away from him. I will be as the dew unto Israel. He shall grow as the lily and cast forth his roots as Lebanon. His branches shall spread and his beauty shall be as the olive tree. And his smell is Lebanon. They that dwell under his shadow shall return. They shall revive as the corn and grow as the vine. The scent thereof shall be as the wine of Lebanon. Ephraim shall say, what have I to do any more with idols? I have heard him and observed him. I am like a green fir tree. From me is your fruit found. Who is wise? He shall understand these things, prudent, and he shall know them. For the ways of the Lord are right, and the just shall walk in them, but the transgressors, or the sinners, shall fall therein. That is the prophecy of Hosea. To the nation, northern kingdom of Israel. Number 27 in your notes. Though his people may turn away from him, God will not abandon them, even though he disciplines them, for he is true to his covenant and to his promises. That's Hosea. That's just one of them, right? Joel is next. We'll be looking at the prophet Joel. Joel is a neat prophecy. There are some difficulties in the book of Joel, and we're going to look at those. Amen? Any thoughts?